The September 6th New York Times featured a profile of Driscoll's, described by reporter Stephanie Strom as the family-owned berry juggernaut. No other company in the world grows berries exactly like these, readers were told. Driscoll's is betting that once consumers know why its berries are distinctive, they will demand them by name, readers were told. The company's YouTube channel will feature stories told by consumers about why berries make them happy. The strawberries trace their heritage to the late 1800s when Aunt Lou came home from a trip with some plants. All of this, readers were told by the New York Times. What readers would have no clue about would be the 3 years of organizing, the walkouts, picket lines, and lawsuits over labor violations, leading to Driscoll's being the subject of a pretty high-profile international boycott. Wage theft, poverty wages, hostile and unhealthy conditions, all of these have been reported. One of the workers' lawsuits went to the Washington State Supreme Court. They won a 2015 decision that ensured paid rest breaks for farm workers statewide. The New York Times story comes with a slideshow in which company owners get a portrait, but farm workers' faces are hidden. Contrast it with the work of labor photojournalist David Bacon, who has profiled Driscoll's farm workers, including Felimon Pineda, vice president of Familias Unidas por la Justicia, the independent union from Washington State. After the Times piece ran, farm workers at major Driscoll's supplier Sakuma Brothers Farms voted to join that union, and they've called for a suspension of the boycott. A story in Washington's The Stranger reported on a celebration. It noted a banner that read, "A victory for our children," and another saying, "Respect the people who grow your food." Somebody alert the Times. Well, the drumbeat of Trump as Russian agent probably won't stop until Election Day. Adam Johnson noted that one subgenre of this line of thinking, that Russia will literally hack our election process and throw the U.S. into a dystopian constitutional crisis, appears to be being mainstreamed, due in good part to the Washington Post. A September 5th Post story followed the provocative headline, undermined down the page, formula. Up top, U.S. investigating potential covert Russian plan to disrupt November elections. Five paragraphs down, quote, "The official cautioned that the intelligence community is not saying it has definitive proof of such tampering or any Russian plans to do so," close quote. Well, government officials investigating something, no matter how implausible, could still be said to be newsworthy. But that story was followed 3 days later by an op-ed by Post contributor Ann Applebaum that lists a series of increasingly goofy scenarios in which Russia could spark a U.S. electoral disaster, as the headline has it. One involves Russian hackers breaking into the voting system, which Applebaum says has already happened in Arizona. That's not true. There have been accusations of Russian hacking of voter data in Arizona, but that's separate from the actual voting system you'd need to hack to change vote tallies. If only that slip were the end of it, though. Scenario four is, quote, "The Russians attempt to throw the election. They might try to get Trump elected. Alternatively, and this would, of course, be even more devastating, they might try to rig the election for Clinton, perhaps leaving a trail of evidence designed to connect the rigging operation to Clinton's campaign," close quote. So that's a double-layered false flag of election rigging, if you're following. But hang on to your hat for scenario number five. Quote, "Once revealed, the result will be media hysteria, hearings, legal challenges, mass rallies, a constitutional crisis, followed by confusion, chaos, and an undermining of the office of the presidency. Trump might emerge from the process as president after all. He will then go on, as promised at so many rallies, to lock her up, and of course to open a broad relation with Russian President Vladimir Putin, the only foreign leader he seems to truly admire. Even if Clinton remains as president, she will be tarnished. At least a part of the country will assume she is illegitimate, that the elites and Clinton clan and the mainstream media stole the election from the people," close quote. Well, as Johnson says, it's unclear now whether we're reading real political analysis or a rejected script for 24, but it would be funny if it weren't in the major daily of the nation's capital. Applebaum goes on to say that probably none of this will happen, but that's not the point because, quote, rumors of election fraud can create the same hysteria as real election fraud, close quote, which at this point sounds like self-parody. Voting manipulation is no joke, and evidence-based discussions could be useful. But running away with wholly speculative scenarios built on speculative scenarios while hand-wringing about hysteria and mass rallies isn't informative. It's just cynical fear-mongering. And finally, when Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman asked security guards at the Dakota Access Pipeline construction project why they were using pepper spray and dogs to attack Native American protesters, the guards backed off, taking their mace and attack dogs with them. It was a clear lesson in how journalism can defend the rights of citizens. The state of North Dakota had a response to this kind of journalism. It issued a warrant for Goodman's arrest, charging her with criminal trespassing. This is an extraordinary action. Jack McDonald, a lawyer for the North Dakota Newspaper Association and for the Bismarck Tribune, told the Tribune that in 40 years of doing media law in the state, he's never heard of a reporter being charged with trespassing. So, how did journalists respond to one of their own being threatened with arrest for doing her job? Mostly, they ignored it. The story was covered locally in the Bismarck Tribune and the Duluth News Tribune. It was covered internationally in the British Guardian and in a mention in the Toronto Star. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe's representative on freedom of the media and the Committee to Protect Journalists issued statements. But most national U.S. outlets, the ones who complain about not getting a seat on a candidate's plane, breathed not a word on North Dakota's assault on the press's ability to cover a major story of the moment. The internet-based Salon and Mashable deserve credit as exceptions. Elite media coverage of a million issues makes clear that they don't mind taking sides. It's a real shame they won't take the side of the right to do journalism when and where it matters. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR.